Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Dr. Mamoru Mori to Melbourne. Dr. Mori is one of Japan's most famous people. He is our first astronaut, and his work has brought space science to the attention of the Japanese people. We are very fortunate that we are able to present tonight's lecture and bring Dr. Mori to Australia. This opportunity has certainly been facilitated by the time he spent as a postgraduate student at Flinders University in South Australia. I'm sure he is delighted to come back to Australia to speak to you tonight. Cooperation between Australia and Japan in science and technology has continued to develop and was officially recognized with the conclusion of the Agreement on Cooperation in Research and Development in Science and Technology in 1980. A number of cooperative programs include the National Science and Technology Center in Canberra, experiments by the National Space Development Agency of Japan's Automatic Landing Flight Experimental Aircraft, Alflex, in Woomera, South Australia, and the Kangaroo Project, a joint Japan-Australian astrophysics initiative constructing a series of 10-meter diameter gamma-ray telescopes also in the Woomera area. I'm sure tonight's forum will further develop the cooperative efforts in science and technology between our two countries. I also hope that it will foster greater interest in space science in all of you, and that perhaps Dr. Mori may even inspire some to become the astronauts of the future. I would also like to take this opportunity to sincerely thank the Asia Society for the generous support and RMIT for their kind assistance. I certainly hope you enjoy this evening's lecture. Thank you very much.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and distinguished guests, and particularly Mrs. Holstein, thank you for your kind introduction. Well, it's always a great pleasure to meet Australians, particularly already 30 years have passed since I first came to Melbourne, and also last time came. At that time, I was a student at Flinders University in Adelaide. That was the occasion I came here was to attend international conference on vacuum and surface science, which I majored in at Flinders University. So in fact, the time when I was acquainted with the space science program. From my childhood, of course, I was very much curious about space and I wanted to become an astronaut. I remember when I was 14 years old, I saw the newspapers and the TV news that the first human being went up into space, Yuri Gagarin from Soviet Union. I wanted to become an astronaut listening what Gagarin said. Earth, blue earth, sphere is beautiful. But at that time, for Japanese, it was not possible to become an astronaut. That was the competition between the United States and the Soviet Union. I had a dream, but I gave up. But later on, I had a chance. When I gave up, I decided to have another dream to become a scientist. Then I had an opportunity to come to Australia to study new science, which was actually brought from the Apollo project. Then I was very lucky. Later on, when I was 35 years old, the first Japanese astronaut was recruited by the Japanese government, and I was very much, you know, excited and applied. Actually, the article in the newspaper about the recruitment of the first astronaut was found by my wife. that time. She actually recommended. And since then, she was a great promoter for me to go up in space. And when I became an astronaut, I was 37 years old. But actually, I could go up into space when I was 44 years old. That means when I had a dream to become an astronaut when I was 14 years old, 30 years later, I realized my dream. So that was a very precious time for me to go up into space. And then later on, I had another chance to go up into space as a mission specialist. This time, the mission which I was involved last year was different from the first time. And I was very happy to show my recent flight. When I went up into space, first time was a scientist. So that I experienced and I did a lot of experiments during my flight, but I didn't have time, enough time to see outside. I was very busy, and also that was my first experience, so I was not so comfortable adjusting space. But the second time, when I was 52 years old, actually last year, I had another dream to be realized. Then I had a real good time to see the Earth. So first of all, I'd like to share my experience with you. Our mission is STS-99. STS stands for Space Transportation System. That means space shuttle. And 99 is the number of our flight. And each shuttle mission is granted its own patch designed by the crew. And you see crew members' name is in the border. And the center image depicts our mission to make a 3D map of our planet. You can see here the shuttle and extended antenna with the Earth below. And something you might not be aware of is that usually there is some private message from the crew within each patch design. Look at the patch again. See the stars. Each star represents the children of each astronaut. For example, I have three boys, and in the case of our commander, Kevin Kriegel, he has got four children. So together we have 15 stars here. This is one of the biggest family crew members in the mission. Just briefly show you our crew members, Chinese boss. She has got a 5 times flight in space. This is a record as a women astronaut. And Kevin Kriegel, our commander, our pilot, Dom Gori, he's flying again in November for docking with the space station. And our Barbie doll, Janet Cavendy, she already flied again 2 months ago. And myself and a German astronaut, Gerhard Thiele. Launch day. The shuttle has 3 engines. The main engine carries liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, and the boosters are solid fuel engines. 6 seconds prior to the launch, the liquid fuels are mixed and ignited. When the countdown reaches zero, the solid fuel boosters are ignited and off we go. It's the best roller coaster ride I've ever had. Just 8 minutes and 30 seconds find us on orbit, complete with the sensation of weightlessness. And as can be seen there, the beautiful curve of the Earth. Our primary mission was to create a 3D map of the world. We covered over 90% of the land we live in our planet. Prior to our mission, we had better and more detailed maps of Mars and Venus than we did of Earth. In order to acquire a 3D image, we required a stereo effect system, much in the same way our eyes work. Because we have 2 eyes, our brain compares the difference, which gives us our depth perception. We have two antennas located here in the cargo bay and way out at the end of boom, which provided depth perception mapping. Next slide shows me in the office. As you can see, every centimeter of space is utilized, and this space is aft of the cockpit and is quite small. All the equipment needed for the primary mission is located within this area. Our collected data provides a much more detailed visual representation of the terrain. This example of a Diamond Head in Hawaii, you see, this is a conventional navigation map which we use currently by pilot, but we improve like this. This better mapping will also aid in natural disaster and many other applications. Well, some people, particularly our families, have told us that astronauts don't know which way is up. I guess this proves it, because there is no up or down in microgravity. It looks more disorientating than it actually is, and it's fun to have lunch like this. We don't think too much about breathing here on Earth, yet it is a major concern in space. When any of us inhale, we use the oxygen in the air and exhale carbon dioxide. That carbon dioxide must be absorbed on the shuttle by lithium hydroxide contained in this container. We must change it twice a day. We are gravitational beings, and as a result, without gravity, our muscles atrophy and our bones become brittle. This is an ergometer and a resistance rubber bands. I wanted to get this over with as soon as possible because we only had a limited time in space, and I figured I could do my exercise at home. In comparison, sleeping is a little more acceptable and is wonderfully easy in microgravity. You can sleep anywhere. Sleeping in space is very comfortable, as if you were floating in a hot bath. Besides taking radar data, to take pictures of Earth is also an important job. Our mission happened to be over Valentine's Day, February 14th. If you see carefully, by chance, we saw a heart-shaped cloud formation due to the island's effect on wind currents. I told my wife, I planned this for her. This is the Nile Delta, and the dark area is where water is available and represents plant life. The pyramids are located in the brown area. From space, the only way we can visually identify anything is with the help of shadows to give us depth. This is my all-time favorite color, the blue turquoise of the ocean close to an island. In fact, I was so taken by this sight, the first chance I had, I took my family and flew to this part of the world to see it up close. It's the Bahamas, and it is truly spectacular. Remember, I mentioned how most of us take breathing for granted. This is a shot of the night side of the Earth. The thin, fragile green belt is the top of our atmosphere. It's green because the atmosphere is radiated by sunlight, and in the evening, we are able to see the molecular recombination, which is represented by this magnificent green belt. All else is black, pitch dark. Notice, too, the stars just above. In space, stars simply glow. They do not twinkle. The twinkle effect is an added benefit from our atmosphere. So every 90 minutes, the shuttle orbits the Earth, and we can see a sunset and a sunrise. In space, the sun white and seems to be without life, rather inorganic. The very thin layer of our atmosphere gives the sun its color variations that we are used to, from yellow to red. What you see changes in a mere few seconds. The Earth, as seen from space, is literally breathtaking. This our blue orb with the beautiful blue water, with a thin, delicate atmosphere float in the black vastness of the universe, and is the only place that we know can sustain life. Our Earth, our home. The excitement of space was beyond my imagination. The preciousness of the Earth and my return home filled me with newfound appreciation for our planet. I also realized that the entire space program was and is a result of amazing advances in science and technology. I was the direct beneficiary. And for that, I am very grateful. Probably all of you know the name of Andy Thomas, first Australian astronaut. He and I often spoke of how lucky we were to be a part of the World Space Program. Both of us felt that because we represent the Oceanian and Asian part of the world, it was our duty to contribute our best effort to the program, and just as importantly, to contribute something to you, the people of our neighborhood of the world, for your extraordinary support and encouragement. So I'm very happy to say thank you to each and every one of you here today. Because of you and the millions like you, Dr. Andy Thomas and I could participate in doing research and gathering data in almost every science, and then being able to share all we learn with all the people of the Earth. I noticed as we flew that there seemed to be what I call communities. North America, South America, Europe, Africa, the Middle East, Oceania, and Asia. So I remember flying over my communities, and I realized that Australia is a really important integral part. Thank you so much for a magnificent opportunity, for giving me the chance to know Andy, and finally for speaking to you today. And I'm very happy to talk with you all again. And thank you very much for your kind attention.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Morey, for sharing so warmly your experiences.